This recording is brought to you by Media One Audio. To learn more about us, visit us online at MediaOneAudio.com.
Hi, everybody. So glad you could all make it out to the SF Music Tech Summit. Welcome to the Love Tech panel on live electronic musicianship. My name is Rich DDT, and this is my cohort Moldover on my right here. We'll be co-moderating the panel. And I just want to say a little bit about Love Tech. Love Tech is the name of the community that Moldover and I have been steadily growing for just about 2 years. We're actually going to have our 2-year anniversary in January, on January 22nd. And so Love Tech, it's a community that's supporting the pioneers of live electronic musicianship. And we create a really amazing event that combines musical innovation and playful celebration to create an immersive, multi-sensory experience that is really heartfelt and an amazing forum for musicians in our community to perform with new instruments and really bring in the future of electronic music.
That's Rich's way of saying we throw good parties.
Absolutely. And beyond being an awesome party where you can enjoy music and dance and get to know the people that are performing, we also create a really educational and collaborative experience that inspires new collaborations in the community by integrating a forum called LearnTech, where the performing musicians and all the interactive artists can talk about their inspirations and how they created what they have. And we also have a lot of interactive art installations that go beyond just the musical part and combine multimedia in really fun and engaging interactive experiences.
Yeah, so we put together a panel of people from the Love Tech community. So everybody here is somebody who's performed multiple times at our events, and largely these are people who also support in other ways too. But I will hand it over to them, and we'll go down the line and do some introductions, personal introductions, starting with Brian Trifon on the end.
Hey there, I'm Brian Trifon. I make music under the name Trifonic usually, and. So my background is I do a lot of music for commercials and some video game stuff and film things. I was a synth programmer and touring guitarist for BT and his studio. And then I've licensed music to CSI, done all the guitars for the Assassin's Creed 2 video game and Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. And I run a video tutorial blog. It's called Next Step Audio. So if you're interested in music production things, please check it out, because I like to share what I know. So I'll just stop talking about that, and I can play you just a little 30-second clip of sort of so you can get an idea of what my aesthetic is. And it's in mono, so that's what it will be. So I'll just play that, and then we'll go down the line here. Let's see here.
Hi everyone, how's it going? My name is Alice Stans. I'm from Ireland. I moved over here just over a year ago and got involved with the Love Tech community. My mic isn't plugged in, so I'm going to have to borrow this one. I am a singer-songwriter. I'm an upcoming producer. I produce my own beats and music. I suppose my music would be synth-pop. That would be the genre, if you call it genre. I I got into music through doing a degree in computer science and not really liking it and wanting to get away from it as far as I could. But I ended up doing a master's in music and media technologies and combining my love for music with technology, which is kind of where I am at now. And I'm going to play you one of my songs or a little bit of it, and you'll just get an idea of what I do.
Carson Day. I was recently, I guess it's been about a year, a little less than a year, that I've been hanging out with the Love Tech crew. Great, great group. Really fostering fun music and great collaborations. I'm a San Francisco native, born and raised. I've been involved in varying levels of local music scenes. Used to DJ at a young age in the rave scene, which eventually gave me interest in producing and engineering. So I went to school for audio engineering. I'm a singer-songwriter, do similar things that we all do here, of electronic musicianship. I'm a sound designer by trade. I've worked for Lionel Trains for about 6 years, doing field recording, radio work. I'm currently in the process of moving my studio from Oakland back to the city, so I don't have anything on me to play for you guys, but that's me.
Hey, everybody. My name is John Brian Kirby. I produce and perform as Nonagon. I got involved with the Love Tech group, I guess it was the second show, and this has been kind of the ultimate music thing for me as an electronic producer and someone interested in performing electronic music. I'm a software developer by trade, and I sort of have segued those skills, if I have any of them, into developing some software tools that help me kind of reinterpret my recorded and produced music in a live context. And I brought about half of my usual performance kit here. It's kind of hard to do a performance in 45 seconds, but I'll try to give you a little demo of exactly what this might sound like if you were to stretch it out into, 45-minute set.
My name is Mollover. That was awesome, John Bryan. Thank you, by the way. So, I moved to San Francisco 2 years ago from New York City. And about 5 years ago in New York City, I started a group called the Warper Party. And the idea was just that I was working with controllers and software in a performance context. And I had a hard time finding venues to play at. I had a hard time finding other musicians and DJs who were doing the same kind of thing. And I wanted to foster a community to bring all those elements together. So I started the Warper Party in New York. And it seemed really natural to do the same thing when I moved here to San Francisco. And it's been really inspiring experience because there's so many amazing music technologists here. But just to tell you a little bit more about what I do. My badge says controllerist. It's not a company. It's kind of like my job. So I'm championing the term controllerist, as in one who plays a controller, like you just saw John Bryan do, and like I've been doing for a long time. And ultimately, we're playing something in software usually, because that's where all the really cool, powerful, exciting stuff seems to be happening. But we still need human interfaces and human interaction for good music performance. I think. So that's kind of what I'm about, and that's kind of what LoveTech's about, too. And I brought a few examples of that. One is this big, giant chunk of gear in front of me. This is called the Mini Masher. And this is the third multiplayer instrument I've made. So I make instruments that I perform with, and then I make instruments for other people to perform with. And this one is made with sort of young people in mind, you know, ages five and up, maybe. But yeah, it's a simple interface for people to make music together, trying to take the technical hurdles out of electronic music making and put the community back into it. So that's what this instrument is about. I think I'll play you a little snippet of music to plug in here because I'm also a composer and performer, and that's where my true passion lies. So here's a little chunk of music from my album where John Bryan was. I'm hearing it, but it's quiet. Lots of CDs too if you want music. Grab one from me.
Thank you, Mollover. My name is Rich DDT, and I am the main organizer for the LoveTech parties that we throw. I spend a lot of my time recruiting the community, doing the booking, coming up with the concepts for the shows. And my original involvement with LoveTech, though, was as an interactive artist. I brought my time machine to the very first LoveTech and then came up with the concept of the Digital Jam Lounge to put the ability to create music in a participatory way directly into the experience of the partygoers. And through perfecting ways of assisting collaborative jamming, I came up with this controller here, which started out as an Oxygen 8, and it's been hacked a bit with the help of Mollover. And It serves two purposes, actually. One is to essentially do live remixing for the core of the Jam Lounge. And it also is the main instrument that I use when I'm performing as well. I started out DJing in 2006 and have since kind of gotten a lot more interested in bringing musicianship into my own sets and playing in a more live context where I'm doing a lot of real-time triggering and mixing in a way that is a lot more engaging than just playing tracks that I love. And I'm just going to show you what it's like to be in Jam Lounge. I'm going to play some of the tracks that we've mixed together on this. one of the things that I really like as an enhancement is to be able to show people what you're doing as you're performing. And the control guitar thing is, of course, inspired by something that you wear like a guitar. but it is cooler. One thing I did on this controller was to separate live remixing into four different kinds of stems, and that would be beat loops, bass loops, melody loops, and vocal loops. And then there's volume levels for each of the loops, and those are controlled by switching simultaneously quantized tracks. And by hitting these keys here, a lot of people, when they're doing initial mappings, will just like launch the tracks and then quantize to a bar, but this will basically just mute the ones that are not playing at the same time. So it has a very much more of a real-time launch interface. And then there's a bunch of effects here as well. So I hand it back over to Moldover.
Thanks, Rich. Another hand for Rich TTT. Cool. So I'm going to kick off the discussion. Since you guys have seen a little bit about how well the methods we use to perform, I thought it'd be cool to start talking about what we panelists do as performers. Because, you know, certainly we all have seen traditional musical performances where you see people playing notes on things like guitars and pianos, and we've seen you know, conductors and composers, all these things that traditional that we traditionally associate with music, and now we can do lots more exciting things like sequencing and looping and effecting and all these cool things. So question is, how do you balance all these different activities that you can now do as part of a musical performance? You know, the roles are all blurry. So what do you choose to do live? What do you choose to automate? What do you choose to have the computer versus the human do? Anyone?
Sure, I'll start with that. So in the case of since a lot of people coming into electronic music are a lot of times keyboardists, in my case, I'm a guitarist. So, you know, what I try to do live, and maybe what's a little bit different, is to, like, if there's guitar parts, obviously play those live. And then other than that, because it depends how you construct the music, but a lot of electronic music is sort of like constructed in a slowly sculpted way. So it's very hard to just fully recreate live. So there's always some kind of background tracks and things like that, and so it's ways of being able to apply effects to that and play sort of the important focal part lines that people can watch you playing something and see that, oh, you're doing something and it's creating sound and it's creating music. Or if it's a guitar, it's more obvious. It's like, okay, that's, you know, an instrument. And I think, but sort of having the visual feedback of seeing you do something and some the sound reacting to that is an important element in that.
I can tackle this one too. My strategy for performing electronic music is more about giving myself a bunch of tools to sort of reinterpret the structure of the song or songs that I'm combining At a bunch of different levels at once. So this thing, I know it's a little bit hard to see when I was playing it. This is an off-the-shelf controller called the APC40. This is part of what I use when I'm performing live, and it lets me take sort of musical ideas, small things like melodies or pads or beats or bass lines that I've written in my songs, and sort of create a structure in real time as I sort of see fit in the moment. So I have this kind of macro control over here where I can choose the different sonic elements that I'm using. So for me, the foundational bits of music are loops. So I'll take out an interesting melody from a song, or I'll take out an interesting bass line from a song and recombine those using these. And then I give myself a bunch of tools to affect those. And I also have another little box, which I didn't bring today because I couldn't fit it in my bag on my bike. But it's a monom, which lets me sort of see into those loops, reorganize them, rearrange them, so I can redo chord changes, I can redo beats using that. And I've set up some software to let me do pattern recording so I can record those sort of rearrangements. And so for me, performance is more about jamming and kind of being in the moment with these musical elements that are not notes, but are sort of collections of sound that are related in some way. And so I have the advantage of knowing that everything here is going to be in the same key, for example, and not needing to worry about that, which gives me the freedom to sort of explore different kinds of real-time compositional techniques, like the looping and recutting and resequencing that I was talking about. So I just give myself a bunch of tools. I don't plan much. I just kind of go with it and see where it takes me as I'm playing, and that's a lot of fun for me and hopefully for the audience.
Kind of building off of that, I mean, you guys have seen that there's all kinds of different new interfaces for music doing this kind of stuff. So I'm curious, like, if there's new paradigms emerging, because we've talked about this before, that like the monom and the APC are similar. There's a lot of these, you know, they give you a grid of buttons with lights on them, and that's become like this, as far as I could tell, like one of the first new paradigms. Like, you know, a whole bunch of people are making them, a whole bunch of people are playing them. Have you seen anything else, or can you imagine anything else like the grid of light up buttons that could become a new interface that's popular for playing this kind of music?
Well, I'd like just to kind of hop in and say that I think the button grid music controllers have almost been around a lot longer. When I was a little kid, I used to play violin, and we actually learned pitch training using Simon, which I think is a very similar concept of, you have a light that lights up and you start recognizing patterns and playing those patterns out again to learn other instruments. So it's kind of come full circle that Simon is just an instrument. It doesn't need to lead you to the violin, to the guitar, to some sort of pitch training, but it actually gives you the feedback you need to learn and create using that one thing. So that's my button grid controller to answer.
Yeah, I think performance as well. Say if you look at someone like Lady Gaga, like she's trying to show that she's like playing an instrument, or people are even shocked when she's like, "Wow, she's really talented. She sings, like, you know, she can sing and stuff." And I think the more, especially in pop music, like in a lot of performance, I don't think it's enough anymore to just play a backing track and sing. I think people do want to see your talents come through. And I think using controllers, using guitars, like MIDI controllers, it's another good way of showing that, you know, you're not just a singer, you can do a lot of different things. And when I play keyboards and sing live, but I also like the idea of jamming with musicians live as well, and bringing that element into electronic music. Sometimes you have like some people on brass jamming with you, and it just, like, I don't know, it makes it more visually interesting for the audience as well. And I think that's important to remember, that at the end of the day it is music, and you know, it's good to be able to jam with other musicians too. So I like the idea of collaborating too.
Can I throw one thing in there? I think as far as new musical paradigms, for me, I think one of the most interesting things that's happening right now is sort of the removal of the interface, in the sense that there's things like the Kinect and these sort of body interfaces, or things like Tim Exile's The Mouth, which are these instruments that you can play using in a way more traditional approach by using your body and your voice and things like that, but using that to affect something that's very different from ideas of your voice or traditional percussive instruments or plucked instruments or things like that. So that's something that I think is really exciting, this idea that you can use your physicality not just by pushing buttons, but kind of just by being in your corporeal self to control some stuff.
This might be a good time to talk about DJing, because that's sort of the opposite direction I see people coming into our community from, like people who would previously call themselves DJs, you know, want to do more than just blend music. Suddenly that seems like it's become easier than it used to be. And I guess a good question is, like, what do you guys call yourselves? Are you DJs? Are you live electronic musicians? Are you controllerists? Has that been a problem, like, getting gigs or billing yourself or anything like that? Like, how do you label yourself if you need to?
Well, I guess I like the kind of general electronic musician term, being that I used to actually DJ with vinyl when everybody was doing that still. And there definitely was, I began to get frustrated that there was a kind of idolatry of a person just mixing other people's songs and waiting, you know, actually using produced songs that were meant to be mixed at a certain point. And so you have to wait for that song to go and then you mix it. And it just didn't seem interactive or that, you know, past beat matching, there was that much skill involved. Although there are many, many DJs who actually, I think, work really hard at their trade and are kind of transcend that idea of it. But, you know, I think in a way we play backing tracks, some backing tracks, we add some stuff on top of that. It's kind of a hybrid DJ environment, though not, I think, personally, I get more satisfaction just that I'm doing something more than standing there and, you know, waiting for the time to mix, whether it's playing some synths, playing a controller. But I think kind of coming back to what Alice said, you want to make a connection, and what Brian said, you want to make a connection between what you're doing and what they're hearing, because otherwise it just kind of seems crazy. Like, look at all these buttons, but you don't know what I'm doing. You can't connect the occurrence of sound with what somebody's actually performing, which I think is important. DJs.
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a DJ, but I really like the idea of being able to, I mean, I'd actually like to aspire to be a DJ, to produce all my own music and then to be able to play live like as a DJ and then kind of take the audience on a whole journey of like tension release. I mean, if you dance with some of the most amazing DJs in the world, like that's what they do. Like they bring you on a journey. It's not just about, you know, playing song requests. Like they know how to like build and like release and just everything that you learn in composition. Like a good DJ is able to do that live and just you're completely in the moment like for hours. So I like that idea. I think it is very difficult to be a performance artist and kind of a controllerist and do everything all at once. I think for me, I'm getting to the stage where I'd prefer almost like to have musicians and like to have a proper band. But then you have the whole thing about, you know, your band could break up and then you're left heartbroken. So I think that's the other thing about being an electronic musician. You have like a lot of control over when you perform and, you know, you don't have to rely on anyone. I think that's also appealing. So I like the idea of doing both. You can.
I was going to add that it's an interesting phenomenon that the word DJ has become really, really popularized. And I think as I've actually, you know, just met more people who are been DJs, serious DJs for like a really, really long time. And I've learned about how the craft like really operates. I think there's a large misunderstanding of that term in the world. And it's all very fuzzy. This like, what does it mean? DJ, whatever. And what does DJ as a prefix mean? And, you know, when you see a flyer and you see parentheses live, like, what does that mean? That's part of why I started billing myself as a controllerist and trying to promote controllerism, suggesting that, like, sure, you could use a controller to DJ, but this is using the thing in the spirit of a musical instrument where you could do real-time musical expression on a virtuosic level. So that's why I went for that name. But, yeah, live.
Can I vent about one thing? I think one kind of damaging thing that the idea of the DJ has done, I don't want to say done to electronic musicians, but one a real issue with this is that electronic musicians are sort of automatically assumed to write dance music. So this, for bookings and things like that, it means an electronic musician's not really playing at a coffee shop for the most part. They're playing at a club where people have certain expectations about what the music's going to be, where people expect that the person who's creating the music is doing it sort of with the intent of providing an atmosphere for the people to kind of do their own thing and dance, and less sort of a concert environment where the attention is on the performer. And I don't want to sound like an egomaniac or anything, but I think when people are, when a musician is sort of doing something different and performing music in a way that's not just designed for people to be in their own environments. They kind of want to connect with the audience. It can be really difficult as an electronic musician to overcome this idea of a DJ and move past the idea that you are just there to kind of provide this funky beat for everyone to, you know, get down to. So for people that are playing music that's not necessarily dance oriented, I think there's a lot of work to be done to kind of overcome that that name.
Yeah, I totally agree with John Bryan on that. I mean, I think it's really hard if you do music that is electronic and essentially, you know, it doesn't work in a rock venue, but it doesn't work in really a club venue because maybe it's not just like all, you know, danceable, or it has long ambient things to it, and it's hard to find the right lineup of other people to sort of play with, or the right venue for it, that sort of outlet. So yeah, that's something that I still haven't found the answer to in terms of, you know, I wish if there's ideas out there of the types of environments that are, that, you know, where it seems appropriate.
We should get some colored ribbon or something.
Yeah. we should. We need a little band. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's also interesting too, just that the kind of the individual song format, in the sense like if you go to a dance club and you're an electronic musician, maybe you have some songs, you play one song and then you switch to another song, that can kind of confuse people, and that it isn't this contiguous experience where, I mean, you're always trying to build a vibe and some sort of journey through your set, but that it isn't nonstop music being mixed together always, and so that the song format can be even difficult to engage in that setting.
I definitely, as a DJ, have had the desire to get people to dance. That was one of the original motivations, was to somehow drive the party and basically demonstrate some of the music that I was really excited about and that really wanted to help you move. And I found the limitations of my own DJ performances, though, where I was focused on just the transitions between tracks, and there was a lot of waiting time that had been mentioned earlier. And I, during those moments, wanted to move myself and create more music and more layers and get back in touch with the musicianship and the live performance that I had started out like playing gamelan and some other instruments years ago, and really wanted to integrate that in such a way and help people understand as well what we're doing up on stage, what we're doing to create the music. Because there's definitely, I feel, a strong misconception that you know, a DJ is creating all of that music. And one of the goals that I have with our event is to really get people more connected to how music is created, to provide new ways of being able to express yourself musically, to do real-time expression, but also not to be restricted to specifically a song format. It's wonderful to have those breaks in between where, like, you have a performance, you soak it in, accept it, there's some break, and then you move on to the next piece. But to do a hybrid sort of thing where you can have the whole flow of a party experience where you really stay in the moment the entire time, but also get to integrate playing and jamming. And I feel like creating new ways for people to play together using new instruments in a way that allows jamming and improvisation and real-time expression with multiple people and creating that connection through new technology will not only help people understand and see how music is being created live, but also be a really enjoyable experience as a performer and a really fresh way to deliver your music as a producer. And so one question we have is about the whole dance experience and the party experience. Are there other roles that you guys would like to see in the audience? Like, how much do you think about what the audience is doing, and do you have other roles that they might partake in?
I was going to shoot in that I do a lot of studying, like, traditional performance techniques, and, like, it's great to do, you know, new forms of interactive music, but there's still, like, how you guys doing? Yeah, you get some kind of response. You can talk to your audience. You can ask them questions, get them to do stuff. And there's plenty of other activities you can do to engage an audience besides get them to dance. And I've seen some great performances that kind of reached audiences on multiple levels. But we're going to run out of time soon, so I wanted to move on to like one other interesting question, which is about new instruments and new technology. And I think it's a pretty exciting time right now when a guy like me, who doesn't have a whole lot of, has a zero electrical engineering experience and has zero, you know, experience building things, can figure out, you know, with just like my basic music skills and a bunch of friends in San Francisco, how to build weird, crazy things like this. So I was wondering if you guys have any thoughts about the like DIY movement and you know, democratization of new technologies and how that's affecting your music and the community around you musically.
Personally, the open source and DIY scenes are fantastic. It's really about using the collective knowledge to be able to achieve something greater, which is just fantastic. You know, personally, I wish I were a coder or had, you know, got a computer science degree, because I think that's where things are moving now, in that you can build a controller, but it's really about how you program it to work. And so using that kind of collaborative DIY, all these resources online, you can it's just an amazing knowledge base, and it makes it much easier for somebody like Matt was saying, where we're not electrical engineers, but you can build something really simply and really understand it. And so I love it. I think it's fantastic. It's great. Yeah.
One thing that I'll chime in is that I think it's really exciting that major software companies seem to be sort of understanding that this DIY movement is happening and supporting it in interesting ways. I mean, when I say major, I don't mean, you know, Microsoft, but companies like Ableton, when they integrated with Cycling 74's Max environment, letting you sort of start customizing and reinterpreting what their software is doing with kind of a solid foundation of what they've done, building on top of that to let you do the things that you want to do. Or I think Renoise has some scripting stuff. All these sort of digital audio workstations, many of them have started giving their users more freedom to not just work with the tools that they've provided, but actually reinterpret those tools, to retool those tools, to kind of use what they've done as a stepping off point for the things that the users really want to do. And I hope to see a lot more of that, because it's a really exciting thing when you've got this software that really, I mean, the sky is the limit with this stuff, and you can choose which part of the sky you're going to go to. You don't have to just deal with there. That was a weird metaphor, but you know what I mean.
Okay, maybe a quick question. I feel like we're kind of defining a new musical culture here. And, you know, I look back to like jazz or look at rock and roll, and guitars and amplifiers are ubiquitous. And it was kind of that technology of amplified sound that made that whole thing happen. And with hip hop, it's kind of like, you know, the sampler and the turntable and sort of a new paradigm for music. Are there any technologies you think are happening right now that are going to define and encapsulate this kind of culture? Is it the button grid? Is it a touchscreen?
Well, I don't know. I think Ableton Live is a pretty amazing software, and kind of the controller is kind of anything that goes with that. I don't know. It's put a lot of fun into making music, and I think it makes it a lot more accessible to individuals who've no background and just want to start like trying to make electronic music and start from there. I think it's very easy to get into. And I think it's, in answer to the last question as well, I think it's like giving people just a great opportunity to start making music. And also with the whole social networks and the internet and everything, it's easier for an artist to actually reach out to their audience. And I think that in itself is completely changing the whole music industry. And there's definitely going to be a lot new music movements from there.
I don't know about the new musical instrument that's going to start everything. I think inherently in the technologies, there are limitations that kind of instruct how you start working with them. So button grid controllers, monohm stuff, you have a tactile feedback when you hit the button, you have a visual feedback when you get the light, but you don't have pressure sensitivity. You don't have those types of things on an iPad or an iPhone. You don't have that physical feedback of the touch, but you can add so much more to it. So I think it's really more about using the new technologies and working within their limitations, and that's what's going to kind of dictate a new music. You know, for hip-hop, your hip-hop example, you know, having samplers, you had 10 seconds, you had floppy drives with samples on them, and that was, you know, part of it. The, you know, people are still wanting an SP-1200 because it's 12-bit and it sounds gritty, and that's hip-hop. So I think inherently the limitations are kind of what dictate the thing, and now going back to what JB said about the sky's the limit, it's almost hard when you have computers because you have to figure out everything you want to do, and there are no limits. So trying to define limits, I think, is what is going to create new music, perhaps.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, totally. Like, I think that the biggest problem now is actually that it's not that there isn't some one thing, it's that there's way too much stuff. There's way too many options. There's way too many plugins or gear to learn. And most of the time, you know, and I think all of us are probably guilty of this too. You think, oh, if I had this synth or this piece of gear, or I had these Apogee converters, that, you know, my music would be better or be more like X, Y producer that I like. And it's just absolutely not true. The problem is, oh, or is 99% of the time it's you and like your limitations, and that it goes, that's everybody, you know. And it's like, so I think, but with that, if exactly what Carson's saying, like setting limitations and just certain parameters to work inside of, like, okay, I'm only going to use, you know, this number of tracks and, you know, these particular things, and just try to maximize what I can get out of it. And like what Carson was saying, that the limitations is what sort of what creates whole new techniques and forces you to break out of the box. You can take the analogy of a traditional instrument as well. You know, if you take an instrument like guitar and you want to expand your range in terms of understanding the fretboard and arpeggios, you could limit, like, okay, I'm only going to use these two strings and figure out how to play all my arpeggios just using these two strings. And that forces you to make new connections mentally and figure out new ideas. And I think the same is true with all these electronic tools. It's like, you know, maybe you don't need 128 tracks in your song. Maybe you should limit it to 8 and then see and combine parts and just keep moving forward. And that will create more interesting results sometimes than just having endless options.
Thank you, guys. We would like to take some questions from our audience here.
We got a microphone because we're recording. So
okay, hey, I was wondering if you guys could point to any examples in mainstream pop music of artists using controllers, inventing new instruments, anything like that.
Sure. Well, one example is, have you heard of Pendulum? They're kind of a big like pop crossover drum and bass, and their singer, Rob Swire, he uses a Zetar, which is a guitar-type controller. It's kind of like the new Rock Band controller with buttons on the frets. And so that's one person I could think of that's crossed over into the major mainstream, at least in sort of the European side of things.
I was going to say, I think Nine Inch Nails is probably on the forefront of all of this
stuff. Absolutely.
All the time. Nine Inch Nails, yeah. Trent Reznor has not only the funds to kind of explore all these ideas, but also the intelligence and the creativity to really do interesting things with them. And every time I see a video from, well, what was Nine Inch Nails, whatever his new projects are, he's always got, I mean, the latest kind of, he's got monomes, he's got dope for analog synths, he's got, you know, continuum controllers, he's just got tons of stuff, and he's using them in really interesting musical ways. So I don't know if he counts as pop exactly, but he's certainly someone that's really successful and is still hasn't stuck to the kind of mainstream guitars, drums, bass, keyboards thing.
And I also think Radiohead, for sure, for a while, they were always busting out new stuff. You know, Johnny Greenwood and his modular on stage and Chaos Pad with guitar and lots of live looping and resyncing. But yeah, I think currently Trent Reznor kind of takes the reign in terms of interactive everything, because he's turned the whole stage into an interactive environment where you approach a surface and it changes because you're close to it, or there's videos, and it's just outstanding, outstanding stuff.
He's probably got a Kinect.
Hi there. I'm kind of just do a multi-part topic barrage here, which is back to the user interface thing. Maybe if you have any comments or experience with React Table, or have seen or played with that at all.
And then maybe a demo of it once.
Yeah. Dealing with the issue of maybe with tempo sometimes. It seems like, you know, we get locked into a loop and a tempo, and we're just sort of, that's like the machine we're strapped to. Integrating visuals, and then, yeah, back to the integration or the innovation, maybe like you mentioned the guitar, like Les Paul or the theremin or a different way of just bringing technology to reinvent a new way to work. So I'm just kind of throwing a bunch of stuff out there for you to comment on. Thanks.
On the reactable, I think it's really interesting that you know, I thought for a while that was kind of this great new controller way. Wow, you use infrared cameras and a projector and you can set up, you know, all sorts of systems you want. You can develop your own touch controller, you know, you can make it sizable, you can make it huge, you can make it small. So, you know, I think it was smart of them to move all that over to iPad because everybody's just obsessed with that now. But I'm kind of still like that projector infrared controller idea that it kind of was born with in the fiduciary markers. It's super... It's a great system. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Feels
Reactivision is the that's the yeah, I think they've yeah, Reactivision.
It started as a like a something out of a university in Barcelona, I think. And originally they were using like a military grade video camera and crazy technology, and it cost like $300,000 to build. And that's why you only saw Bjork playing one and no one else. And it still cost that much when I saw the demo in New York City in like 2007, 2008, but I think they've changed it into a more manageable product that you can check out at NAMM this year for like $20,000 retail.
Well, even with a camera and like some like tracing paper over a screen, you can do blob tracking and fiduciary marking, which is so you don't need, you know, the full IR system or the laser window table. You can literally just have a crappy little webcam, like I have a Logitech free webcam, and I put it in a box with a piece of glass and tracing paper on top, and it'll track finger points, do blob tracking, and Reactivision tracking stuff. So you can make them very simple as well.
I think it's a really good example of an instrument that creates a laboratory environment. I feel like it that guides the performance to some degree, and I wonder the question of different personalities and how they move towards different kinds of interfaces. And I think it's really awesome to be able to use new technology like that to create really unique setups. But it's important to think of like how you want to move, how you want to have fun on stage, and how it matches the aesthetic of your musical creation. Like if you want something more danceable or upbeat or high energy, I don't think it's going to be the reactable. I think you need to use something that has a lot of tactile feedback where you can really move your arms in a really exciting way. So it's important to think about those personality matches and movement matches with your instruments.
I just want to add that I support fun and play, and I think those are the things that we really get into music, or at least I really got into music for, and I try to create those same things when I'm performing. For me, that's what it's all about. Another question?
Do you think the note is dead?
Question is the note dead?
No.
I'm with that.
Third.
I haven't started composing using micro scales yet, so no. Yeah. All fairly equal tempered at this point.
I think it lives very happily alongside its big brother, the full-on waveform. And the idea of making music as manipulating waveforms is something I've been thinking a lot about. It doesn't matter what the content is so much. I think about it more as like, here's a chunk of music or some stem, and then how do I manipulate it in really fun ways in real time?
That was my note.
And I guess even in music that's more noise-based or has, you know, less traditional specific notes being played at a time, we've segregated our frequency range into note values as well. So I think, you know, you can EQ noise and you'll have a note in there. You can there's always going to be that bridge there in a way.
I guess that was referring more to the note versus the loop, the note versus the bound option.
I can probably comment a little bit on that. I think it's important to distinguish between the production and composition process and the performance process. For composition, I don't think anyone would say that the note is dead for anyone who wants to write a melody. I mean, a note is a note. For performance, I think that what a lot of us are doing, or at least what I'm doing, is more akin to what a conductor would do than, for example, an instrumentalist. And so in that sense, the idea of playing individual scales, playing melodies, improvising, has sort of taken on a new character where you're improvising and trying to be skilled at playing sort of a more macro structure, larger structures like waveforms and loops and things like that. So the note is certainly not dead, but I think that it's not necessary anymore for performance. I mean, it can have all of its own cool things too. But I think there's a new paradigm that's sort of emerging for this particular kind of performance where you're trying to manage a whole lot of things going on at once, where it's just not practical to deal with playing notes in that environment.
I have a quick question for all of you. I'd like to know what the last piece of technology that you bought to integrate into your live performance, and what's next on your purchase list, and what the price point was. If you could just go down the list.
I hustle really hard to get free gear. So I got some new Isotope stuff that's awesome.
I got one of those Korg Nano controls with the little faders and knobs, and that's it's very cheap. I think it was maybe $49. It's added a lot of simple control. It's small. That's another thing, is like portability, because like as someone that's like both played in bands and had like large setups and small, it's like you get tired of lugging like big expensive stuff around that you're worried that people are going to spill their drink on. So like a little cheap Korg Nano thing that just takes up a little slot in front of your computer. And $49.
Yeah, actually I got that as well. So
nice.
I don't know. I think the last thing probably was that, or just a regular MIDI controller, just for playing virtual synths on the on the laptop. I think if I was getting a new piece of gear, I'd really like to get maybe a synth, like a Virus Access Snow or something like that, something that's portable, but you can just play it through a MIDI controller and you have like really good sounds. So yeah.
I used to work at this store, Robot Speak, up on Haight Street, which has lots of instruments. So I can't quite recall what the very last thing I bought was. But the two biggest things I bought, there was a Korg MS-20, which is, you know, very monophonic and analog. So that was a very different thing. But Native Instruments Machine, I thought was an amazing, really changed how I work and make music. It's a dedicated controller with dedicated software, and it's a MIDI controller as well. And it pairs very nicely with my mono. I think that was like $499 or $599 for the Native Instruments Machine. And then the synth was like $1,500, I believe. No, it's like it's actually called Machina, which is like M-A-S-H-I-N-E-E-S-C-H. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. S-C-H. Machina.
In a German accent there.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this thing was the last piece of gear I bought almost a year ago, and it was like $350 or something. I don't really have anything on my list because I have the basic controllers. I've got this button grid, I've got a mono, a pad control, which is what Moldover built this instrument out of, a number of, which is like an MPC style drum pad, and a couple keyboards. And I'm more interested in taking all this different equipment that I've got with all these different paradigms and using the software to sort of reinterpret the way that I'm using them instead of getting a new thing. And that is not a criticism at all of anyone that wants to get new stuff. I think it's awesome. I just already have a lot of stuff that I think could be used in a lot of new and creative ways. So the software is more the focus for me at this point.
For me, it was the Akai LPD-8. And something like $55 or $60, and for me, it's a great building block for creating and modifying instruments in the spirit of do-it-yourself controllerism, very much inspired by what I've learned from Moldover. And I'm interested in finding cheaper pieces that are pre-built and taking them apart, ones that are durable and fun to use, and making hybrid controllers out of that as I find an instrument that's really fun to play on stage. Because I'm not satisfied with anything out there yet, so it's a constant journey. I think we're going to see a lot more innovation, especially given the ease of hacking and creating your own instruments lately.
Wait, I changed my mind about that last thing I said. I do have a piece of gear that I want. Moldover has built something called the Mojo. That's your thing. But it could be mine for a price.
For $20,000.
But one of the awesome things that Matt has integrated into that are arcade buttons and these touch strips. And I think that the idea of really durable, really, really fast response buttons and these controllers that have a kind of a non-linear, well, I mean, they're linear, but you don't have to sweep through all the values. You can tap and wiggle and all those tricks that you've showed us has a lot of really expressive possibilities. So I'd love to build something maybe based on the MIDI Fighter or based on one of those MIDI brains like Dope for whichever one you tell me is best.
UCAPS.
UCAPS?
UCAPS.de.
Yeah.
MIDI Box has some pretty good DIY.
boxes to put together.
Okay, I want one of those.
Okay. So I think we got time for one more question.
I just wondering, you know, music across the course of years has dealt with melody and rhythm. And one of the things that seems to be left out of electronic music in particular, but just in modern music, is dynamics and character of instrument. And I'm wondering how, in the electronic music world, how much thought you give to dynamics in terms of loud and soft within a melody and that sort of thing, and whether or not you feel like that's a limitation of the medium itself, if that's something that any of you all are thinking about, or what is dynamics, you know, how does that function within the music that you're creating?
I think that's the limitation of the greater audience in a way, because everybody wants it to be stupid loud, limited beyond complete, you know, no dynamics at all, painful to listen to for any duration of time. So it's coming from an engineering background in recording, I like to keep my stuff a little bit more dynamic, but it's hard when you're trying to compete with whatever's on next in your shuffle list or whatever. I think it's extremely important. I love dynamics and being able to listen to something for a while. It is something I take into account when composing, but it can be hard given the instruments we have now, and I think just the end user, what they expect to hear out of it. And maybe that's mostly dance music, but it tends to be that I just think everything's just smashed beyond belief, and before you even have a chance to do anything else with it, it's just squashed.
I think there's been way too much of that in popular music for like the last 15 years, and just like we associate the 80s with like digital synthesizers and digital signal processors and that sound, that's what we're going to associate like the 90s and the early aughts with. But I think the current revolutions in music are going to change all that and bring back dynamics in a big way. I mean, you do have control. The user ultimately has control over the volume of their playback device. And I think when our playback devices become more interactive and artists start exploring more interactive music platforms, you know, like making your own iPhone app or making something with RJDJ just making more interactive music where, you know, even in games is a great example, like music can still retain all its dynamics and expressiveness because it's a more controlled environment. And so I think we're seeing a counter movement now.
I think there's also, in addition to just volume dynamics, there's other kinds of dynamics in the electronic sort of squashed format that you can take advantage of in terms of, like, I think of like texture dynamics, and also the stereo image too. You can make something seem a lot bigger where you have it start very narrow in its stereo field, and then all of a sudden it drops and it's massively stereo. And just in terms of the use of frequencies too, having things filter down and then all of a sudden, so there's dynamics outside of just like the like amplitude dynamics and it being squashed and that sort of thing. So there are ways to, I think, make things dynamic just use it even in the format of something that's totally like squashed, limited beyond belief.
Yeah, I guess I was meaning more musical dynamics than necessarily the mastering
loudness work. Yeah, so yeah, musical dynamics. I mean, it's all about having things change over time, and some things being constant, and then there being a clear focal point that, you know, where you're taking the listener on a journey and all that. So.
Yeah, I think as well. Just that there's good and bad recordings in every genre, you know. And I think if you like listen to a whole spectrum of different songs that are different recordings, that some electronic music has been like the most amazing production, most amazing dynamics there is. I mean, electronic music uses like things like found sound. You could have like a sample of like birds singing, or like, you know, just water, or just like, you know, the rumble of like an earthquake. You know, you can have all these things brought into electronic music that you're not going to have if you're just a four-piece rock band. And I think listening to the best recordings in electronic will definitely broaden, definitely broaden your taste, and just like you'll really be able to take that into other genres as well.
Thank you. We are unfortunately out of time. If you'd like to see some of our performers, our next opportunity for you to come check out Love Tech is December 18th, and Moldover will be performing there alongside many other talented controllers, all who have done DIY instruments, by the way. Lots of really amazing new controllers will be used. And come check us out. Our website is lovetechsf.com. And thanks so much for coming and joining us today.
Thank you.